the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Neil Tracy, good morning to you. How are you?
Not too bad, guys. How are you doing?
Yeah, well, we've been talking about the existential crisis that faces Irish rugby. So, you know, same thing we've been doing for the last 2 years here on the show. What's your take on this as our resident rugby expert?
I think it's far from crisis, particularly on Leinster's level. Like, it is maybe a little bit worrying that we've seen a trend where against Saracens and I would say Exeter maybe as well to a slight degree, and then against the English national team where there has been a physicality issue over the last few years. But I think it's something that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be worrying too much about it. Like, Leinster have won, what, they have won six or four trophies of the last six available. They've been to the last three Heineken, or they've been to two Heineken Cup finals in a row prior to this, the semi-final before this, and losing out in the quarterfinals. Even Munster, granted, they haven't been winning things, they've been getting to the latter stages of these competitions. So I don't think all in all it's particularly worrying. I think it's actually quite promising as well that we're starting to see Ulster getting back to the levels they might have been at back in 2012 or 2013, where they're actually getting to the latter stages of competitions as well. So I wouldn't be panicking too much at all.
How do you fix the physicality thing, though?
That is probably a more of a slow burner. I think for the in the short term, you probably work around it and try to find things you can do where you can actually maybe try and avoid a few of those physical confrontations. Because I think maybe a little bit of the problem Ireland were having, or the Irish teams, was they were actually trying to go at Saracens and take them on physically. And similar, Ireland were trying to do that with England as well. They were trying to take the English strength and actually, you know, try to use it against them and to just basically stand up to it. Whereas I think maybe if you might actually have to recognise that if there is a bit of a problem there, find a work around it and, you know, don't end up in as many confrontations on the pitch. Try keep the ball alive a little bit more. Try keep it out of the type five, you know, try have less set pieces, less scrums, less lineouts, and try to keep the ball in hand maybe a little bit more.
Don't knock on, basically. Don't be knocking on the ball, lads.
Yeah. Or don't give away penalties. That's a bad thing to do in general. So I should be the head coach, to be honest.
Well, look, I mean, become a consultant. It's more lucrative and less pressure. That's what you want. Right, so Ireland are playing in the two remaining fixtures that we have left in the Six Nations. We've got the Italy game, which is obviously cancelled because of COVID, and then the France game, which was never going to be played at that stage after the first game got cancelled. So we were talking about this a little bit earlier on. This is not just a free shot for the Ireland head coach and the Ireland coaching ticket. The prize money for the Six Nations is not something that we would have talked about in the past as being hugely important or hugely relevant, because the IRFU were and always have been well run and rich. They sold land out by City West and they were sitting on a big pile of cash wondering, what are we going to do with all our money? We were speculating about maybe they should be buying London Irish or buying one of those teams in America. And now, since COVID, it's like, ooh, lucky that they were sitting on that bed of cash for these years, because the game faces an existential crisis in Ireland, as Philip Brown told us here when he was talking to Keith Woods, part of Keith Woods' State of the Union. So the prize money is unbelievably important. If any team does the Grand Slam, which you can't do this year, you get a 1 million bonus. For winning the tournament, you get 5 million. So the total prize money for the winning could be 6 million. Not going to be this year, it's going to be 5 million. Second, you get 3.5 million. Third, you get 2.5. Fourth, you get 2 million. And fifth is 1.5. Every 500 grand is another few jobs saved for another 6 months. And I'm sure the players are acutely aware of this. So what do you think the appetite for experimentation is going to be here, Neil?
I would say it's going to be low enough as well. But I was actually thinking, even in different terms, what you were saying, the thought of the prize money and how important it actually is at the moment was something I wasn't really even thinking about. But now that you say it, obviously, literally every single cent or euro actually is counting at the moment. But 30th of November 2020, if I'm right, definitely the end of it, towards the end of November, is, can you believe it, in 3 years' time, the World Cup drop for France 2023. And, you know, you want to be inside in that top four tier of teams, because you want to be a first seed and you want to avoid, more than likely, England, New Zealand and South Africa in the 2023 Rugby World Cup draw. So that is another incentive as well. Ireland are currently fourth in the world rankings. So if they can maintain that between now and the end of November, they are, you know, in theory going to be getting a better draw as well. So that would be, otherwise, you know, this Autumn Nations League as well, it would have been a prime territory to actually experiment and throw in some new players and try out some combinations. But I think the fact that the World Cup draw is coming up in November, and the fact that there is a Six Nations title and a Grand Slam in theory there to go for, and as you said, with the financial situation the way that it is, it's tough to experiment, and it's tough to justify experimentation.
Important to win your group in the World Cup, it turns out, to try and avoid New Zealand in the quarterfinals. Another bit of advice there for the Ireland management setup that we give them for nothing this morning. We're giving the good stuff away. 087-9180-180 is the number if you want to get in touch here and complain about my team. Rather than picking one team for the Italy game, which I don't think makes any sense, because these two matches are going to be played back to back, and actually one game is more important than the other, but giving some players the game time and the opportunity against Italy to see what they can do is going to be hugely important too. So we're going to go first with the game against Italy. Cian Healy's on 98 caps and got injured in the Six Nations, and I thought, ooh, I wonder how bad that injury is going to be. Is he going to get the opportunity to get to 100? I think over these two games, he's going to get to 100, assuming he's fit. So my front row is for the Italy games, Healy, Kelleher and Furlong. And in the second row, that's assuming Furlong is fit, by the way. There are some assumptions around fitness here. I think we've heard Furlong is close to fitness. I don't know what the Kilcoyne situation is. If Kilcoyne is fit, he's definitely going to start one of these two games. And I don't mind which of the two games he starts, because I think he's right there. But I haven't seen any suggestion yet that he's just back and totally ready. I've put Ryan Baird and James Ryan in the second row for the Italy game. I've gone with CJ Stander at 6, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Stander at 6, Peter O'Mahony at 7. Now, it's O'Mahony / Josh van der Fleer / Will Connors in that situation at 7, and Caelan Doris is at 8. Cooney at 9 for the Italy game, Sexton at 10, and then a centre partnership of Bundiaki and Gary Ringrose for the Italy game, with Keith Earls and Andrew Conway on the wings and Jacob Stockdale at full back for the Italy game, because I think that I want to see what Stockdale can do. Are we going to do this team first and then do the...
You may as well just bring in like the big hitters, like some of the people who've missed out there. Like obviously, like Robbie Henshaw gets in for the France game and stuff like that. So you may as well go through the France team.
So the France team is next. And again, it's, if Kilcoyne is fit, it's Cian Healy / Kilcoyne, and the other one's coming off the bench. I've gone with Rob Herring for the France game because he did nothing wrong in the Six Nations. Furlong, if he's fit, obviously. Ian Henderson comes in for the France game. James Ryan, it's Caelan Doris at 6, Jack Conan at 8, and Peter O'Mahony at 7. It's Conor Murray and Johnny Sexton. It's Bundiaki and Chris Farrell.
What?
It's Jordan Larmour and Keith Earls and Andrew Conway at fullback.
Right, first thing you have to say about this is that you have to be excited about it, but I thought you said at the outset here that this wasn't going to be a method of experimentation for Ireland. How can you possibly put forward an Ireland team that you say is going to be one that you trust in on form in terms of previous output for the country, and not have Robbie Henshaw in either starting team and in either squad? I think if you're picking your subs, does he even make your 23 on either day?
Well, I suppose there's room for discussion around the subs. It depends, actually, right? For the France game, I was just thinking there. For the France game, maybe we have a 6-2 split, in which case Robbie Henshaw 100% is on the bench because he's so versatile and can play basically anywhere across the back line apart from 10 and 9.
So you're ending, if you're Andy Farrell, you're ending Robbie Henshaw's involvement with the starting 15 now, done, over. Sorry, Robbie, you've got to really work your way back into the starting team. It's gone, that jersey's been taken off you.
Bundiaki and Chris Farrell, I mean, if physicality is an issue for the Ireland team at the moment, let's get them in and see what they can do. And let's keep everybody on their toes. Like, there's an absolutely case that nobody should feel like they're nailed on in this team at the moment.
Well, go on, Neil.
I think Ireland are in a position in, specifically, I would say, centre, and also then at open side of the flanker, where they can actually game by game, they can actually have a kind of a horses for courses selection rather than a, you know, this is our first choice centre partnership. This is our first choice open side flanker, because on at flanker, you pick Peter Omani there. You kind of hinted the way it goes as well, though, because you're saying, you know, it could easily be Josh van der Vleer. It could easily be Will Connors. It could easily be someone like Jack O'Donoghue in Munster. It could easily be Jordy Murphy. There are actually so many options in not just the back row, but specifically at open side flanker as well. Personally, I probably would actually be going CJ Stander at 8 and Quaylen Doris playing at number 6, because I've been really impressed with Doris playing at 6 over the last few weeks, and I think CJ Stander is more natural in himself than at 8 as well. I just think it works better.
I don't think center, CJ at 8 though actually hasn't had the ball playing skills that we've seen that you need to have to be. So is CJ Stander going to make it at 8 for the Lions? I don't think so, but Quaylen Doris might be that player who, look, right now, if I'm picking a team to grind out a 15-12 win, I'm probably picking CJ Stander. But with a team that I think I want to next year be able to compete for a Grand Slam, I want Quaylen Doris at 8.
Why don't you keep him at 8 then for the France game?
Because I think Jack Conan's form at the moment is slightly better, and he's keeping him out of the Leinster team at that stage.
Is that a nod of acceptance?
No, I don't know. I just don't see if you're full on saying that Quaylen Doris is the number 8 for the future, then, you know, don't play him at 6 now. You may as well play him at number 8, because he's good enough. If he's good enough to be in the team, he's good enough to be playing in his natural position.
That's my case for the Italy game, but I actually think that at the moment, the form back rowers, like, I think Conan is outplaying the other players, the other candidates for that. So that's a team pick to win that game. Quaylen Doris picked at 8 for the Italy game is like, let's see what you can do there. And I'm saying that in the team and in the selection, CJ is in a battle now with Conan and Doris for the 6 and the 8 spots. And I'm, to be honest, like, I would happily see an experiment where we stick Ian Henderson in at 6 in the Italy game, and we have Baird and Henderson and James Ryan to see if these three can actually brutalise opponents, so that when we come up against England next year and we have Vinopola and Itoje killing us again, what does it look like when we have the three grunts on the field killing the opposition? I'd love to see what that looks like. Maybe you do that though in November when there isn't half a million quid on the line.
Like, awesome, I mean, it's interesting. I think that power game definitely comes to the backs. Like, I'm not sure if you've got anything else to say about the back row, O'Neill, but I'd definitely be keen to get your take on that midfield.
Moving towards the midfield, as I was saying, I actually think it's been the Robbie Henshaw, Bundiaki and Gary Ringrose dilemma over the last 2 years is something we actually probably haven't had to discuss too much, because by pure fluke and by pure chance, over the last, 3 years now since Bundiaki has qualified for Ireland, it has always seemed that one of the three of them has been either injured, suspended or unavailable in some way for a game. It's been incredibly rare. I'd say you could probably pick on less than 10 occasions over the course of the last 3 years where all three of those players, it seems, have actually been fit and available to play a test match, or at the very least like a first choice selection game rather than a game where people are being rotated in and out. I actually think it's such a tough one at the moment. I think Gary Ringrose is the only absolute lock that you can pick out of those three. He's the guaranteed at outside centre.
Is he guaranteed?
I think he is. I think he's the best of the three, and he's the one that offers the thing that the other two don't necessarily offer. I think he's a little bit more elusive. He's a brilliant defender as well. And I just think he offers the little bit of creativity that maybe Aki and Henshaw don't. If you're worried about power, quite possibly you actually do play Robbie Henshaw and Bundiaki together, or, you know, one of Henshaw and Aki or a Chris Farrell together, if you are really, really worried about, you know, size and physicality and power. But I guess if you're playing a game where you're actually confident in yourself to be able to take on opposition and beat them with your rugby skills, I think Gary Ringrose is your guaranteed starter in there.
I'd go along with that. Can I just say one thing on the Aki Henshaw partnership? We need to remember that that was Ireland starting midfield against England in the Six Nations this year. And if we're using England as a barometer, and how do we go about forming a team that does not get hammered routinely by England?
That wins. You've got to frame that as a, how are we going to beat England?
Well, no. Let's actually start by clawing this whole thing back by not getting embarrassed by England.
No. Any team that's built not to win invariably loses. It's the innate conservatism that ruins all of sport. It's not a way that you can actually build a sustainable future. Let's not get beaten. No, we have to try and build a team that's going to win the game.
I think if you're building a team, that isn't going to get hammered, more than likely you are going to lose at the very least.
It was a figure of speech. Okay, it doesn't matter. But the point here is that against England earlier this year, Bundy Aki and Robbie Henshaw was your midfield partnership. Do you then play that exact same midfield the next time you go out and during the next section of your campaign, if your very aim is to be better and to win games in which you actually got hammered by power in the last time? That is just a question I'd have to you. Like, you floated that Aki and Henshaw midfield partnership there, Neil, and I just wonder if we've already seen the evidence of that. Now, what we have seen since then is evidence of Henshaw and Ringrose together up against a pretty powerful midfield of Damian De Allende and Chris Farrell in the Red of Munster. Who won that day? I know it was first day out for De Allende, but I think the more cohesive, maybe cohesion is the wrong way of framing it, but the better midfield pairing that night was certainly Henshaw and Ringrose. And for me, I think that they're a step ahead of Farrell. I think Farrell is definitely the fourth man in that three. But to be leaving Henshaw out of both games, I think, is ridiculous.
Yeah, he's good to have on the bench, you know? Like, I think that what needs to happen is a jolt across everybody where you are no longer guaranteed to be starting these games. And in November, I would, after these two games, I think taking your point on board, Neil, about where you want to finish in that top, but also the prize money suddenly being so important. Like, you're absolutely looking at a 9 and 10 partnership that is completely different from the existing partnership. See, what do we have here? What are we building towards? And next year, when I'm trying to win a Grand Slam, what will my team be and what will it look like? I think that you've got to give Chris Farrell an opportunity here, that he has played well. He has shown that he is also creative. His passing is excellent. And in a better team, where he has hopefully some go-forward ball, then he's going to look better than Farrell and De Allende did that night for Munster.
I think
probably to remember as well is there are more games coming in November as well. We're not just talking about, you know, games against Italy and France and the Six Nations, where that's going to be the only chance to actually see combinations and see players. I think we spoke about the experimentation at the top and how there probably isn't going to be a huge amount. I think throughout the course of the five or six games between the October and November, we probably will see quite a few players given a chance, but in, you know, maybe one or two players in this game, one or two players in a different game, rather than a kind of a, you know, three or four, you know, four or five players put in for a test debut just to see how they get on. I think it's going to be a slow, you know, couple of combinations tried out, but with a conservative eye on it, right? You know, first case or first goal has to be to win these games.
Yeah, look, I pick these teams to win the games, absolutely. I would like to see some experimentation done, particularly in November, about what our team looks like when we have the absolute beasts all on the field at the same time, and how do we create that? What does that team look like? And if it's completely imbalanced, if the back row doesn't work because, you know, Henderson's not actually a back row and hasn't turned into a player who will be a back row, and he's only ever going to be a second row, fair enough. But like, let's just at least have a look to see if there are certain game situations where having the three man mountains on your team is beneficial for you. And also, if you add in suddenly a centre partnership of Bundy Aki and Chris Farrell, then that's a big swarming team where wherever they look, they're met by big, ferocious men who are capable of breaking you in the tackle.
The other one I'd bring up is you're going Jacob Stockdale at fullback
for the Italy game.
For the Italy game,
Conway at fullback for the France game.
Is the Stockdale selection for the Italy game? Is that a case of Gerard Gilroy, the coach, bringing aside his player who's a little bit out of form and saying, you know what, things haven't been going your way for the last little while. You put the arm on the back and you say, going to give you a run out. You're going to start full back this week. We're going to, you know, we're going to see what you're made of. We're going to give you a bit of extra space probably to move around with the ball in hand as well. Is that your chance of actually, is that your opportunity in theory to kind of like manage the player as opposed to actually you think he's the best option for full back at that day?
I think our best full back is Andrew Conway at the moment. In terms of form and in terms of career evolution, I think it's pretty clear, and that's why I've picked him at fullback for the France game. I think Jacob Stockdale is clearly an international quality player who is out of form and a little bit out of confidence, and it's the coach's job to try and get that back to a point where he is a massive resource for you. Like, his try scoring record in international rugby stands comparison with almost anybody in the game's history, so that is not an accident. And Brian O'Driscoll was talking about sometimes he doesn't even appreciate himself just how physical he can be, and you want to get that back and you want to give him the confidence. I like the Chesson Colby tries at the weekend that you were commentating on. It's hard to blame him for that. Like, he's up against Diego Maradona. Like, Maradona made everybody look stupid. If it was the only issue that we'd seen from Stockdale, then I'd be completely forgiven of that, and he would be straight in the team on the wing as a nailed down one of the first names on the team sheet. He's just not there at the moment, and I think that putting him full back in the Italy game would be, we have confidence in you and where your career is going. And certainly he would be, if he plays well in that game, he would be in the mix for the France game, but on the wing. And Conway is my man to be king of the backfield, number 15 for the France game.
I hate to be
more curious about.
You can't rugby back to Diego Maradona.
You should have. That's what Peter Reid always said.
Peter Reid should have. What I would be more curious about, Jarrod Owen, is, so that's they're the back threes for the games against Italy and France. What is the back three in November when James Lowe is officially Irish qualified?
Well, you stick him in and see how he gets on, right? You want to see what that
but
looks
is
like.
In, but as in, who's the odd man out in that situation is what I'm trying to figure out. Because I think we can all agree James Lowe probably is getting straight into the Irish 15 when he's qualified.
I'm not sure he gets straight in. I think they make him wait a little while. I think that they don't want to go, well, come on in. I don't think, like, I'd love to see Keith Earls' form at the moment. I haven't seen enough of his game time just recently, but he is always in my Ireland team until it comes to a point where, you know, he puts in a couple of bad performances or three or four bad performances. You go, okay, it's going to take you out for a little while. But in the meantime, he's in my Ireland team. Conway's in my Ireland team at the moment as well. And then after that, it's a battle. So, like, Larmer misses out, or Stockdale misses out, and Lowe comes in. But that's the pecking order. That's my depth chart at the moment. I'm sure the Irish team think that Jordan Larmer is a superstar, a game breaker, somebody that they, again, need to give the minutes in international rugby to and the exposure to so that he learns and they get the benefit of the learning and the curve that he's on at the moment. But his form since lockdown has been patchy.
Yeah, like I still would have Jordan Larmer as the first choice fullback with, you know, for these first couple of games anyway, a combination of Conway and Keith Earls on the wings. I think I would still be dropping Jacob Stockdale, possibly even from the 23. Come November when James Lowe is around, I think James Lowe is going straight into the 11 jersey. I think Keith Earls might be the one that has to miss out, but I think Keith Earls wearing 23 on the bench is an absolutely fantastic option. Also, putting Keith Earls on the bench, I'd still be very, very wary of going with a 6-2 split on the bench. We saw at the weekend with Ulster, all it takes is one injury for a back in the opening, you know, opening 10-15 minutes of the game, and your strategy is absolutely screwed.
It's a high risk, but, like, you know, next time we play England, if somebody gets injured, in fairness, like, if you look back at the England game, we were 17-0 down at half time. We gifted them two tries. And is that the game where Robbie Henshaw had been? No, that was the New Zealand game. Somebody got injured fairly early on in that game as well, where, like, literally everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong. So, not trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but just to have, like, some flexibility where you go, we're going to batter you today, and if you still beat us after that, then we'll come back with a different strategy next time.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that you've had two games to pick a team for here, Jerry. So you've managed to cop out of most of the big decisions here, especially on the back three. Like, I want to know, so say if Andy Farrell is saying to you, I've got Conway on one wing, Earls on the other wing, who are you picking as your fullback right now? You're picking Stockdale.
Conway's my fullback.
Okay, so say if it's...
If I have to pick a team for my life, an Ireland team, today, in a World Cup final tomorrow, Conway's my fullback.
And then your wingers are.
Well, now Earls. if it's a World Cup final, my wingers are Earls and Larmour. And if it's 5 weeks time when James Lowe is available, it's Earls and Lowe.
So,
Jared, can I?
Go on.
Stockdale's out then. Sorry, go on, Neil.
Can I present a hypothetical situation to you, Jared?
Yeah.
So in this game against Italy, where you're giving Jacob Stockdale a chance to, you know, get a bit of confidence back into himself, let's just say that confidence comes rushing back and he has an absolute stormer and he scores a hat-trick of tries from fullback and he looks like, you know, he looks as good as he has ever since the New Zealand game 2 years ago at the Aviva Stadium. Do you still keep him out of the starting 15 the following week against France?
I probably don't. I'm telling him that I'm giving him the opportunity. You know, new information came to light. The rug really brings the room together.
Yeah, that's great. I just wanted to double check this wasn't just you just patting him on the head and saying well done and giving him a chance for the sake of it.
No, I think that it's clear having a left-footed kicker in your team is hugely important. I would also be bringing him aside and going, do you see what Elliot Daly can do? You've got a big old boot on you there. Do you think you might be able to ping them over from the halfway line at some point for us? Because if you can, you're going to be rich for the rest of your life. Maybe not like just at Ulster, but like. I definitely think that we need to be a bit better at that kind of stuff. Rob Kearney's left boot was one of the most underutilised things in Irish sporting history when it came to the opportunities that it could have given us over the years.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. Owen, you haven't weed on my team from too great a height here.
The complete cop-out is my issue here, that you've essentially picked two teams. You're like, oh, I'm not picking one or the other, I'm picking two teams. I don't know, I think that the Henshaw thing is obviously a disgrace, and let's not forget that our last great results for Ireland was Ireland against Wales, and I know he came off of the HIA that day, but he was Ireland's best player for whatever, 45 minutes or however long he lasted that day, in Ireland's best recent performance. I think you're drastically overrating him, and to leave Robbie Henshaw out of both starting teams, you copped out and still left him out. That is the bottom line here, that you have decided to end his Irish involvement for this year.
Well, there's a whole month of games coming after it. OTBM live in association with Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette giving you the confidence to tackle the day ahead. Neil, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us. A couple of quick comments. Alias Al says, Stockdale's going to leak tries. Leave him out. The finishing 15 is nearly more important than the starting 15 in international rugby these days. There are certain benefits to starting Henshaw on the bench. Agreed. Peter M says, Stockdale's not good enough. Let's face it. There are two big white elephants in Paris that walk into the team. Time for the RFU to use the Sexton rule to get Zeebo and Ryan back. Listen, Dunica Ryan in that Ireland team for the last 3 or 4 years, again, just imagine what it would have been like to have him driving standards everywhere he went. Bundy's performance off the bench versus Munster when Connacht at 13 men was monstrous. Hard to overlook him at 12, says Tom on Twitter. And so we didn't. He's in the team for both those big games.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.